Call from mom. Answer it. Call silenced.
Instacart knows nothing gets between you and the game. That's why they make ordering from your couch easy. Stock up today and get all your groceries for the week delivered in as fast as 30 minutes without missing a minute of the game.
You have 47 new voicemails.
Download the app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
Hi, I'm Lauren Sherman, the host of Fashion People. I love fashion, obviously, but shopping for fashion online is kind of annoying. There's endless scrolling, my size is always out of stock, and I can't actually find what I want. No one has really made this work for me. That is until List. Instead of browsing different stores one by one, on List you can see and shop all of the best fashion. List is the secret shopping weapon now used by all my most stylish, cool, and in-the-know friends. Don't shop around. Join 200 million fashion shoppers, including me, on List.com. That's L-Y-S-T. Or download the List app on the App Store today.
36 days to the election. Things are moving fast. Ron Fauché joins us, political analyst and publisher of Lunchtime Politics. Ron, welcome to the show.
Well, thank you, Newell. Happy to be back.
You know, Ron, there's some things that I guess when you're looking at your polls across the country that are relatively stable, but other things that seem to be pushing and tugging and pulling and new revelations every day.
Every day. And somebody asked me earlier today whether there would be an October surprise. I said, October surprise? We have a surprise every week in this campaign. We don't have to wait until October. So we'll see. But we're following the state elections, the Senate elections, as well as the presidential elections, state by state. And, you know, there's always something interesting. There's always some turn of events.
Well, let's start with events that started on Saturday. So the president nominates Amy Coney Barrett as the next to fill the Ruth Bader Ginsburg vacancy to the U.S. Supreme Court. Obviously, there's been a lot of backbiting over whether or not he should have nominated someone, whether they should have waited or otherwise. How does this play for him politically?
Well, I think it's a sword with two edges. I think it politically energizes the bases of both parties. You know, the hardcore liberal left base and the hardcore conservative right base. I think they're all about as energized as they could possibly be at this point. And it points out the importance of a presidential election and who wins the election. The fact of the matter is that even if Donald Trump is only a one-term president, he will have appointed one-third of the Supreme Court, which is more than many presidents have. So whoever you vote for and whoever wins these presidential elections can play a big role in American history.
You know, I've kind of chuckled as everyone has tried to find something to hang their hat on as to what happened to Merrick Garland. Obviously, you and I have talked about this before. There's a legislative solution. They just got to pass it. If nobody likes the way this works, and just pass some legislation to set out a defined guideline as to what happens when there's an opening. But obviously, sure, they don't want to do that because they all want to engage in the same hypocrisy if it means they're going to end up on the winning side, right?
Well, that's right. The mistake that Mitch McConnell and a lot of the Republicans made 4 years ago with Merrick Garland is that they use the argument that, well, we shouldn't do this in an election year as a cover. They should have just been honest about it and said, look, the American people elected a Republican Senate. We do not want to put any more liberals on the Supreme Court, so we're going to block the nomination. You know, that. And then if they had done that, it would have been more honest, I think, and they wouldn't be attacked now for hypocrisy. Because what we're seeing is, you know, is simply the use of power. A lot of people don't like it because of the sense of hypocrisy and inconsistency. But there is no way that either party would not take an opportunity to make a critical Supreme Court appointment when they have the chance and they have the legal right to do it.
Yeah. Was that more about leading into that election season for, you know, the next president at that point in time and making sure that one party doesn't get all scarred up by the other party?
Well, I think it probably was, although I never understood why they, you know, the Republicans, when Obama was president, didn't go hold a hearing on the appointment of Merrick Garland and then defeat it, you know, and defeat the nomination. But that wasn't the path they chose, and so now they have to explain it away.
So we jump forward. Obviously, there's been much to do about whether or not Trump would be willing to accept the results of the election. He answers in a qualified way. Folks are trying to say that means that you're going to have to drag him out of the White House with a team of mules. That's not exactly the way I see that response. How do you see that response?
Well, I think it's a reckless thing to talk about not being, you know, willing to have a peaceful transition of power and talk about an election that's going to be fraudulent before it's even completed. I think it would be in Donald Trump's interest not to talk about this and just try to win the election. And if there's closed states and there's mail ballots that shouldn't be counted, and there's technical problems for certifying states, then you raise it at the time. But I do think it's a mistake for him as a national leader to raise all these possibilities. And I think frankly, he's doing it because he knows it drives the Democrats crazy. I have a lot of good Democratic and Republican friends, and the Democratic friends I have are calling every day saying, you know, he's going to steal this election. They're going to steal it through the post office. They're going to not count the mail votes. They're going to go into Congress and, you know, push his reelection through, even though voters vote against it. And if anything else, I think Trump has distracted his opposition, you know, chasing down these rumors and trying to attack them instead of just being focused on winning the election and convincing voters to vote on their side.
Ron, as I look at your publication, Lunchtime Politics, every day that you put one out, it's occurring to me as I look back, and I looked back at a bunch of them over the weekend, Trump's hardcore vote has not moved much at all, if any. Quite frankly, I mean, when you're figuring the averages, it really hadn't moved one way or the other. You go back to 2016 and you see very similar circumstances where that hardcore base number's there. And I'm really curious as to whether or not he's still under polling that 2 to 3 point number that he did so. And in some states, it was even higher than that. Yet again.
Well, I think it's certainly possible. I do believe that Donald Trump does underpoll. I think that there is a constituency of voters in this country who find it socially unacceptable to say they're for Trump to a pollster or to a friend or relative, and they don't do it, but that they do intend to vote for Trump. Now, that's probably, you know, in looking at the numbers over the years, I doubt that's more than maybe a point or two, maybe 3 points in some cases. But, of course, a point or two or 3 points can win an election. You know, Trump won Florida and Wisconsin and Michigan and Pennsylvania by about a point or less last time. So that so-called hidden Trump vote, which I do think there are some votes like that out there, I think can have an impact on the election. But I would point out that 4 years ago, Donald Trump won the presidency with 46% of the popular vote. Now, that's 46% included the hidden vote. And, it wasn't a poll. It was the way people voted on Election Day. And I see no reason to believe so far that he is going to be able to get any more than about 46% this time, even though his average vote percentage is more, you know, it's probably about 42%, 43%, 44%. I do think he'll end up, you know, getting his full 46%. But the question is that enough? And can you win a two-way election with 46%? He was able to do it last time because there were third-party candidates in the race who took about 6% of the votes off the table, and that made it possible where he could overcome a two-point popular vote deficit and still win enough states to win the electoral vote. But the race is somewhat different this time.
Yeah. Obviously, breaking news yesterday, I believe, New York Times story about his taxes. Do you think that's going to play into this at all?
Well, you know, those of us who look at elections have counted Donald Trump out many, many times for bad news stories. And just about every time he sort of bounces back. So I think everybody is reluctant to count him out or to say he's going to lose the election because of this. I mean, clearly it's not something that's going to help him. We don't know where the New York Times is going with this, whether they have more stories. And you know, there are still, you know, 7, 8, 9, 10% of the electorate that hasn't decided who they're going to vote for. They, you know, most of these voters don't like either candidate. And something like this could be harmful to Trump. But we'll have to see. You know, we've got a debate coming up tomorrow. We'll have to see how Biden and Trump handle this tax question. And if Trump does really well with it and Biden doesn't, then, you know, it's going to go a long way to sort of smoothing it out. Or if the other thing happens and Biden handles it well and Trump doesn't, then it's going to be an issue that will keep troubling Trump.
I've been surprised in some respects, but then again, not so much, that the mainstream media has not been a little bit more excited and inquisitive about the fact that Joe Biden puts the lid on his campaign early every day, has answered very few questions, has made his accessibility one that's an incredible challenge, and really hadn't said much as we go through this campaign.
Well, I think that's true, and I think that that a lot of people are giving Biden a pass because of the coronavirus, frankly, and people are not expecting him to be running around doing press conferences every day and making speeches and rallies, nor are they expecting President Trump to be doing that. So I do think that it has made campaigning in some ways for these candidates, particularly Biden, easier. And he isn't as exposed to risk of saying the wrong things to reporters or saying the wrong things in question and answers after speeches. And I think all of that has been very helpful to Joe Biden, frankly.
But why, you know, I get maybe that you're not out and about traveling around the country, but when do we get to the point that we don't ask candidates legitimate questions as a news agency? I mean, these are just softballs. Why are we interviewing Joe Biden's wife over the weekend, you know, in on the eve of a debate and asking her about his gaffes, and she just shuts it down and said, "We're not going there. We're not talking about that." And Tapper just backs down like an obedient puppy.
Well, you know, you see that in the media and you see it over and over again. Hopefully in these three debates that are coming up, you're going to have some legitimate, fair-minded, tough questioning of both candidates. So we'll see where it goes. You know, there are clearly biases in the media. You've got Fox News that operates in many ways as a sort of a spokes organ for the Trump administration. You've got MSNBC that operates as a a spokes organ for the political left, and CNN, you know, which has been increasingly hostile to Trump. So you see that, and you hear it, and you hear reporters now not only asking questions, but answering their own questions and commenting on people's answers. So the media has really changed a lot in its moving away from sort of pure, coverage of the news to opinion and putting opinion in everything. And I think it's a loss for the country, frankly. I think people have trouble finding, just pure news and pure comments about what these people are saying in politics, and so that they can make judgments on their own.
I like the old days when they challenged the incumbent the entire time he was in office, and when the challenger to the incumbent would surface, they would force or compel the challenger to try and distinguish his or her policies or his or her belief system against the individual they're challenging. And I haven't really seen much of that at all.
You don't see much of that, because politics is now a straight out attack from day one. Donald Trump certainly does it. He's a fierce, vicious attacker. Not so much on Biden's part, but his supporters certainly are. So you've got just a lot of attack. And anytime somebody does something somebody doesn't like, they're attacked for it. And so it goes on and on and on and on, and it continues like this. And sometimes it creates problems of false equivalency. And sometimes it blurs issues, and sometimes it blurs the facts and the truth. And the more the more voices, opinion voices there are out there, and of course people want everybody to have a shot at their say, but the more opinion voices you have out there, the more attack you're going to have. Just look at social media. Yesterday I ran a simple question about asking whether it was wise for President Trump not to release his taxes at this point. And it just stirs up all kinds of attacks and people making comments and attacking one another. And, that's where politics is right now.
But, what I find interesting is that they equate tax returns to whether or not you are a successful businessman, and that one is not always reflective of the other. And I just kind of chuckle when I hear this, because I hear see all these folks texting in they're bent on why they believe that this is important, because he's held himself out as a successful businessman. Well, he may have been in many respects, and in other respects may not have been, but in the end, so what? I don't know many people that are in business, they're making money, they've got a comfortable lifestyle, and they go about telling people, well, I've been a really crappy businessman all my life. it's not their view of their world, right?
Sure. No, that's 100% true. And but I think Trump sort of opened the door himself, by talking about how wealthy he was, and he was the greatest businessman in the world and the greatest negotiator in the world. And I think he sort of created an expectation that isn't always backed up by the facts of his own business career. And the other thing is, he is, I believe, the first and only major presidential candidate over the last 40 years who hasn't released his public taxes. So that makes the issue more difficult for him. And I know polls show that strong majorities of voters think that he should release taxes. And that includes some Republicans who think that he should.
Yeah.
When I say release taxes, I mean his tax returns.
His tax returns, yeah. No, absolutely. When we come back, Ron, I want to talk a little bit about tomorrow night. Who's got more at stake? The debates politically, obviously. There's a huge buildup to this. And There's been a lot of game playing in the background as well. We'll be right back with Ron Fauché, political analyst and publisher of Lunchtime Politics. Give us a call, 504-260-1870 on the Mortgage Financial phone and text line. We'll be right back. We're back with Ron Fauché, political analyst and publisher of Lunchtime Politics. Ron, when we look at the national polls and a lot of the state polls, which the one I find those to be more reliable, Trump is trailing in a number of states that he ultimately won in 2016, and Biden is carrying the vast majority of the states that Clinton carried in 2016. With that as the backdrop, obviously, Trump has more to gain because the polls have him running behind.
There's no question about it. And, you know, if you look at the polls, the most recent polls out today, Biden is leading Pennsylvania, Wisconsin, and Michigan by more than, you know, small margins. I mean, they're not enormous, but they're clear margins. If he just wins those three states and holds the states Hillary Clinton won 4 years ago, he wins the presidency, which means Biden doesn't have to win Florida and North Carolina and Arizona and all these other places, you know, we're putting a lot of attention on. So Biden has more to lose tomorrow night because he's ahead, and candidates who are ahead have more to lose. And the reason is because debates are easier to lose than they are to win. It's very hard to win a debate. Usually, you know, good debate performances are max, you know, sort of offset, and it's a draw. But it's a lot easier to lose a debate, and Biden has to be very careful he doesn't lose this debate tomorrow night.
Obviously, I think one of the tactics that the president will attempt is to draw out where Biden actually stands on a number of these issues, because he's been reluctant. You know, I mean, a while back he said almost, you know, basically read my lips, there will be no more fracking. And now we've kind of retreated off of that issue, big issue in Pennsylvania. And, it'll be interesting to see whether or not he goes for the juggler on that question, because that issue and that issue alone is something that can flip the numbers in Pennsylvania overnight.
Oh, it could. That is a big issue. Biden has moved on that after he won the nomination. But I think what you'll see is I suspect you'll see Trump going after Biden, making him defend or you know, separate himself from a lot of left-wing policies that other Democrats have embraced. I think that'll be part of it. Everything from, you know, the details of the Green New Deal to the Bernie Sanders, Elizabeth Warren healthcare programs and you know, open borders issues, racial reparations, all of that. And then I think you're going to see Biden under attack from Trump on personal things. I suspect you're going to see Trump go after Biden on his son Hunter Biden's dealings in the Ukraine and asking about that. I suspect that everything will be on the table. I don't think that I wouldn't be surprised with anything that Trump would say or go after Biden on. So Biden's going to have to be very well prepared for this. And it has to have a strategy on how he's going to handle all of it, because he's going to have a ton of bricks come down on him.
Why do you think the mainstream media has not been really aggressive on some of the findings of that Senate investigation into Hunter Biden and a lot of unexplained multi-million-dollar payments from foreign officials, some even linked to human trafficking? It's like nothing, crickets. Nobody's asking anything. No major investigative report by any major publication in the country.
Well, I suppose the simple answer is because they want Biden to win. And so they're not going to harp on negative things about Biden. But I suspect that that you're going to see all of that come up in these debates. Donald Trump is not shy about going after his opponent in a very, very personal way. And you know, the media is going to go after Trump on this income tax thing, and Biden will likely have to get in the middle of that. And then Trump is going to come back on him with the whole Ukraine issue. So expect this to be a pretty rough debate. I mean, the only way it wouldn't be is some people are advising Biden to stay away from Trump, ignore him, don't respond to his challenges and attacks, and just talk about what he's going to do as a positive candidate. But that's easier said than done. When you're taking those kind of hits, and you know, the big thing to keep in mind about debates is that they are unpredictable. You know, you turn on any of the TV networks today and tomorrow, they're going to be speculating endlessly about, oh, well, Biden has to do this and Trump has to do this and so and so is going to do this and so and so is not going to do that, and they don't know anything about what's going to happen. Things happen sometimes on the spur of the moment, and it makes these debates very, very unpredictable. In the past, you've had some good debaters, people like Richard Nixon, for example, or Al Gore, who were considered good debaters, who lost debates, you know, because they didn't perform that well. So you just don't know where it goes, and that's why people should watch it and make their own comments and make their own judgments about it.
Do you think Chris Wallace and the other moderators in the upcoming debates, I'm hoping that they compel them to answer the question, to not talk around the question, but to answer the specific question that's asked. I don't know about you, but when I watch these debates, I find that two-thirds of the questions asked are never answered.
Right.
And they just talk around the issue because they don't want to answer the question. And I really believe the best moderators are the ones that come back and say, that was not the question. This is the question. Please answer the question. And it would be refreshing. And I don't care who screws up, for someone to hold their feet to the fire to get them to answer the question.
Yeah, I totally agree with that. And, you know, that's the point of asking questions. If you're going to just ask questions and allow the person who has to answer them to say whatever they want without regard to the question, then it defeats the whole purpose. So, yes, they should, and they should insist on it. And the debate rule should allow the questioner to have the time to follow up and to keep doing that. We have seen that happen sometimes, and I think it's been very effective. But we also see happen what you're saying, and that is people will ask a question, they'll give a sort of a phony soundbite answer, and then because of timing or whatever, then they go off into something else. And as a result, the voter, the audience is sitting there saying, well, what was that about? I didn't get anything out of that.
Yeah, I just find it a little disconcerting. Ron, how much do you think Black Lives Matter as a topic will how big a part will that play in the debates?
Well, you know, the reason why you never know what extent any of these issues will play is you don't know what questions will be asked. I suspect a question about Black Lives Matter and the whole issue of racial equality that has really heated up in recent months will be a focus of the debate. It is an issue that has a lot of sharp edges, you know, for the politicians involved, and depending upon how they handle themselves. But if it's not dealt with, you know, thoroughly in this debate, expect it to be dealt with in the other two debates. That's the thing you always have to consider, too, because a lot of times one of the candidates doesn't do well in the first debate, but they have opportunities to come back and do better in the second and third. We've seen that over and over again. We saw Barack Obama in his first debate against Romney was terrible and Romney was terrific. And it made people think, well, gosh, Romney can win this election. But in the second and third debates, Obama came back and did much better. So you really have to look at, ultimately, you're going to have to look at all of the debates together and figure out, you know, who came out the best and who came out the worst out of all three of the debates. And sometimes it's surprising who does and who doesn't.
Someone asked me just yesterday, they said, Noel, what do you think? I mean, you know, who do you think is going to win the debates, you know, and who do you think will ultimately win? And I said to them, and I mean this with all seriousness, I said, both of these gentlemen are quite capable of snatching defeat from the jaws of victory at any given moment on this campaign trail. And unlike Barack Obama and others, and I thought Barack was an incredible campaigner. I thought he was very polished, very smooth in his approach, incredibly articulate. And Romney, too, in many respects. I don't find either one of these gentlemen even close to that level. And I just think this thing could blow up for one of the other ones that, you know, the day before the election.
That's right. It could. Now, I 100% agree with you. Joe Biden has shown that he's capable of making mistakes and producing gaffes, you know, on a moment's notice. Of course, we know President Trump, you know, says things that sometimes sound like a mistake or a gaffe, but he intends it to be. These are two people who are capable of screwing up a debate, believe me. And they have three opportunities to do it. So we'll see how it happens.
Okay, Ron, be honest. I'm going to ask you, aren't you glad you're not one of their handlers?
Oh my God! Absolutely. In fact, I would send a check to both campaigns so that I wouldn't be one of their handlers.
I said the same thing yesterday. They started laughing. I said, I don't know how many list of medications I'd be on was handling either one of these guys. But anyway, Ron Fauché, thank you so much. We'll be checking back with you after the debate, if that's okay. We'd love to hear from you. Ron Fauché, political analyst and publisher of Lunchtime Politics. We'll be right back. Stay with us.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.